Okay. Hi, hello, everybody. It's about almost 9:05, so I think we can start. I'd like to invite all of you to our VRLC business and speakers meeting. And my name is Marlene O'Neill. I'm the president. And we have, and I term out after this time, so you'll have somebody new in October. So I'd like to do a roll call of officers. Rob, would you like to do that, please?
Okay. Let's see. We've got doing the roll call. Marlene is here, president. Let's see. Vice president is Rogers. Roger was here. Oh, he's here. Okay. And treasurer John Ross is here. Okay. Rob Turner is here. Corresponding secretary Mike is here. Okay. Keith Johnson, board member. Who's the other board? Katrina's here. That's it, isn't it? Lee is Lee here? Okay. So Lee is absent. Okay. That's it?
Okay. What I'd like for now is for we'll do introductions. Just tell your name and where you're from. Just tell what your name is and the chapter you belong to. And And Daryl has the roving mic. Thank you, Daryl. I'm sorry, we missed
Albert Chapson, Silicon Valley chapter.
Welcome, Ron, Albert.
Hello, Keith Johnson. Gee whiz, Glendale Burbank area chapter and San Gabriel Valley chapter.
Okay.
I'm Mike Keithley, president of the Silicon Valley chapter.
This is Roger Peterson. I'm vice president, and I'm leaving along with Marlene, and there's no truth to the rumor that we're leaving together just because we're leaving at the same time.
Linda Perel, president, San Francisco chapter.
Yeah. Albert Contreras from San Gabriel chapter and East LA chapter and president of the OCB Alumni Association.
Wow. Man with many hats.
This is Connie Bateman, and I'm secretary of the Sacramento Capital Chapter ACV. While I have the mic, did any of you know Barbara Messinger?
Yes.
You probably know by now she passed away. She passed away, and we're having a celebration of her life from 4:15 to 5:15 today in room 1013. That's the presidential suite. Thanks.
Hello, this is Steve Foyt from Bay Chapter, citizen of the city of Alameda, and Odin delegate.
Okay, this is Josie Conkling, and I'm with the Capital Chapter, and I've been a long-time person with CCB, 43 years.
There you go. Diane Phelps from Solano County, and I'm secretary. You're happy.
Kathy Skivers, delegate Bayview Chapter.
Daryl Skivers, member of Bayview Chapter.
And Lee, we're doing the introduction.
Okay. Lee Morton, San Diego Chapter.
There you go. Is there anybody here? Is there anybody new come in?
Wynn's just coming in.
Winifred. Oh,
Wynn!
Good
to see you,
Wynn. Yeah. Well, Wynn is our wonderful editor of the Braille Writer, and I know she's from San Francisco. Without her, I don't know what I would have done when I first took office. Everybody, we are selling, BRLC is selling fudge, Katrina's fudge, and we're also selling their shopping bags. And I don't know too much about, Wynn, could you explain, I forgot what they call them. Chico bags, and you can, it's like, it's a pouch, and you can fold it or make it into a shopping bag. The shopping bags are $5 a piece. We have fudge, we have $2 bags of fudge and $5 bags of fudge. The bags, they're in Ziploc bags. The bags are the same, but you can tell by the weight. So obviously for $5 you get more fudge. So if you can't buy, you know, just You can buy a $5 or $3, $2. You can do anything you want, or you can buy however you want to buy it. So please stop by. We're open right now, and don't leave until the meeting's over. But we have people working, I got Lee, you're working this afternoon from 1 to 3. Is that okay? Thank you. John will be working with you, John Ross, and then 3 to 5 is Debbie and who else?
Tell him a little more about the bags?
John will be working with Debbie.
I wish I did have one. I don't have one with me, but when they wrap up, they're a little thing that fits in the palm of your hand, and it has a small handle that you can put, like a cord that you can put on your arm, or a clip that you can clip it to a belt. When it's open, it will hold 25 pounds, and it's really a wonderfully, versatile bag. You don't have one, do you, Chris? Pardon? Oh, they're all assorted colors. They asked me if I wanted all one or assorted. I said, well, they won't care about you.
There's blue, red, I think yellow, but it was hard for us because it was hard for us to label all that. So, but they're nice colors, blue, red, yellow, and I, for myself, I don't really care. I'll probably take a yellow and a red one so they can see me coming. So, yeah, that's it. Anybody? Okay, so with that done, I'd like to turn the mic over to Rob so he can read the minutes.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Okay. Let's see. Membership meeting minutes, fall 2009, Friday, October 30th, 2009. President O'Neill convened the meeting at approximately 9:10 a.m. Attendees introduced themselves by name and chapter. Donations were collected for the Braille Challenge contest. Our contribution will help pay transportation expenses for a contestant who cannot raise the necessary transportation cost to attend the challenge. Rob Turner read the minutes from the spring 2009 membership meeting. The minutes were approved as read. John Ross presented the treasurer's report. The beginning balance was $2,308.65. Total income was $1,451. Total expenditures, $1,155.76. Income from our raffle was $1,248. The cost of the raffle was funded by donations. The ending balance was $2,872.65. The treasurer's report was accepted as read. Braille Literacy Conference will be held in October in Orange County this November. Lynn Laird wants to represent BRLC there. Her gracious offer was accepted with thanks. Winifred Downing wrote a resolution pertaining to the Matilda Ziegler magazine and asked that it be endorsed by BRLC. The magazine announced in the October issue that after November, the Ziegler magazine would become an online publication. The magazine would no longer be produced in Braille or any other media format. As President O'Neill began to read the resolution, Linda Perrell, a member of the resolutions committee, announced that the resolution had already been heard and that the committee recommended a due pass. The reading of the resolution was completed and a motion was made to endorse it. The motion carried. There were two resignations from our board after our spring membership meeting. Corresponding Secretary Linda Perrell and Director One Paul Borelli, both positions were filled with board approval until elections could be held. Mike Keithley was appointed corresponding secretary, and Katrina McCurdy appointed Director One. Both appointees were elected by acclamation. The board's recommendation to permit officers to run for a third term if no other candidates sought their office was discussed. Volunteers for the nominating committee to elect the president and vice president were Kathy Skivers, Keith Johnson, and Linda Perrell. Next on the agenda was fundraising. The discussion focused on the raffle. Debbie Berry and Rob Turner agreed that being a monitor was a frustrating experience. President O'Neill formed a fundraising committee consisting of John Ross, Winifred Downing, and Keith Johnson. Their assignment is to look into new fundraising ideas. Debbie Berry volunteered to write a profile of Mike Keithley for the Braille Writer newsletter. Rob Turner and Roger Peterson agreed to find a speaker for the spring program. Roger mentioned Freedom Scientific's new policy concerning signed Braille drivers. Braille display manufacturers will be charged a fee to have Freedom Scientific, quote, sign, that is, approve their drivers for a fee. He encouraged members to sign an online petition opposing this practice. The business meeting was adjourned at approximately 10:05 a.m. Our guest speaker was Jeannie Holtz, a former Braille teacher at the Valley Center for the Blind in Fresno. After obtaining her VI credential, she began teaching adults to read Braille at the Valley Center for the Blind. She now works full-time in a ministry to the disabled at her church. She has a passion for Braille and knows that it is an important tool for developing literacy. She believes that for many individuals, reading by touch is critical. Braille conveys spelling, punctuation, and formatting. Even if older individuals who just lost their vision never learned to read Braille, frequently they can use it as a labeling tool. She told her students that Braille represented literacy, competency, and independence. It also provides a means to protect one's privacy. Respectfully submitted, Recording Secretary Rob Turner. Yes.
There's a motion on the floor to accept the minute as read. Kathy made the motion and seconded by Keith Johnson. All in favor of accepting the motion as read, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Carried. Okay, John, would you now give the treasurer's report?
Okay, our beginning balance as of the close of the fall convention was $3,014.25. Total expenditures were $676.42. Total income $985. Ending balance is a $3,322.83. News could like it up to 8, including what we collected here, are a total of $570. And that's my report.
Okay, John, how much did we collect for the Braille Challenge last year?
We collected $331 last year for the this year's. Yeah.
Any discussion on the treasurer's report? Oh, okay. I believe the raffle that we made last summer was $1,248.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Really good. Let's do it again.
Not the raffle. Okay. Any discussion on the treasury's report? Entertain a motion to accept a...
So move.
I didn't entertain... Oh, someone's got to do that. So. Okay. So, John, actually, I heard John first. John made a motion to accept the report as read. Who seconded it?
Albert.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of accepting the treasurer's report?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions carried. Very good. Yes.
I'm going to collect for the Braille Challenge.
We're doing
the rest
that.
Of this meeting and maybe at lunch. So, well, if he visits you again, nobody will know what you give or don't give.
We're gonna do that. I just wanted to get all this stuff out of the dues and stuff out of the way to make sure everybody can do their dues. While I'm thinking of it, and maybe Lynn, I don't know if she's here, but Lynn Laird really wanted to do the literacy conference. She was there, but apparently there was a booth open, and she had to attend the booth, and the conference was another cost to do. So, you know, she couldn't do everything because it costs money. So hopefully the next time there's a literacy conference, if she would be so gracious as to attend it, she can just go to that conference. But we didn't know about the booth that was there. She had to be there from 9 to 5. And the conference was another fee to attend, the actual conference. I hope I got that right. Okay. Now, the Braille Challenge, first of all, we all know about the Braille Challenge. We talked about it. Last year we made $331, which is very good. And that is to send somebody to pay their transportation to go to the challenge, the Braille Challenge contest in L.A., and the Braille Challenge is about they are tested. You're tested in comprehension, spelling, and speed. And we do this because all the people, participants, are high school and below. And so they need someone to travel with them because they're minors. So we need to pay the transportation of the student because they can't do everything. So the money that we collect here and that we will be collecting at the Kahlua Luncheon, BRLC Kahlua Luncheon, which is at 12 o'clock, goes to that cost. So anything that you can find in your heart, you know, $1, $5, $10, $20, whatever, we would really appreciate it, and it will help somebody go to the challenge. And Winifred always writes about that in our Braille writer. So John, if you can tell Wynn how much we made, so she could put that in the Braille writer. Also, if you want to do any kinds of contributions to the Braille writer, if you have something to offer, please get that in to Winifred Downing by August 1st, so that we can have the so that Lynn Laird and Winifred can get the Braille writer out by, you know, at least October, probably September, but she usually gets it out within those 2 months. Also, I'd like to thank Lynn Laird. I don't know, I know she does a lot of work. She donates a lot of time, and she gives us a break on the cost of printing and the materials for the Braille writer. And so, you know, Mike Keasley, if you would write her a thank you letter, I will give you the contact. I'll give her both her email address and her home address. Probably, I would think that a snail mail letter would be appropriate because, it would show that we really appreciated it. I usually write thank you letters in snail mail form. We don't have any stationery, unfortunately, because we don't, write too many letters. So, you could just write BRLC and, and then, what? How wonderful we are. No. But anyway, Mike is a very good writer. He did a lot of work on the Blind Californian, so he was terrific in that. I want to acknowledge that. He did one hell of a good job. He's still doing it, so.
Madam President?
Yes.
I wanted to tell you that Lynn said she's going to bill us by the hour and not by the page because she doesn't have much use for the very big paper that we were doing, and we were doing it, you may remember, we were using it as a cost-saving measure. But she said it doesn't matter, and she will charge us by the hour, which will amount to the same thing, but she always takes off a lot of hours. So that's why your prayer letter is the size that we all like better, but
right after this.
The minute we were refusing it to try to save money.
Well, that's good. That'll certainly, she's always been so giving about that. That could cost us a lot of money. Okay, now, we talked about the Braille Challenge, so everybody is just like church. Get your collection out. And John isn't a priest,
no.
But he's the devil because he's collecting our money. So John is going to collect for the Braille Challenge right now as we talk.
Okay, this is Josie. I just want to let you guys know that I participated in the Braille Challenges last month when we went, and it was a wonderful experience. What I did is I was one of the scorers, and I did the kids, I would say from first grade to fourth grade, and it was really neat. And when I went out to the lobby, I talked to some of the kids and their parents, and I thought that was really cool. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We always like to hear about the Braille Challenge from our... I was going to say for our viewers. I didn't mean that. For our BRLC members, because when you go out and you start doing things for the Braille Challenge, like scores, keeping, you know how hard they are working. So thank you very much for that, Josie. Okay. Fundraising, our favorite topic. We did very well, I think, last year. And we had a wonderful fundraising committee. It was John, I think. And Keith and Winifred. So I'd like to acknowledge them for doing such a wonderful job. And, yes, we are. I just want to get this out of the way because that'll be the... Okay. Also, we're selling. So I'd like to see if they would like to serve again, in the fall, just get that. Would you be willing to do something for that in the fall for the fundraiser? Keith, John,
yes.
Okay. What about you? When could you serve? What did she say? And John. Okay. Nominating committee. Kathy and Linda, you served, and so that'll come up after. I got another item. So, okay. And the delegate for national convention. I won't be able to do it. So is there something funny that's going to the convention that is willing to do the national convention in Arizona, Phoenix? No? Could you be delegate? Well, okay. So Roger said that he'll be the delegate. Thank God. If I can't, yes. Okay. Now, we're going to have elections. And the nominating committee was Keith Johnson, Linda Perel, and Kathy Skyvers. They did a wonderful job. And just so that I want to find out if they would serve again in the fall. Okay. So somebody, I don't know who the chairman was. Keith said it was either Linda or Kathy. He said it was a toss-up. So, oh, John, here's $20.
Yeah.
We need, okay. Any, has everybody collected for the Braille Challenge or donated?
Here, you can have it.
Okay. Yeah, checks are welcome. You can send them in the mail to VRLC, to John's address. And if you need it, just, you know, it's in the Braille writer if you've got it. Or you can always email me, or and I'll get it to you. Okay, so now we're going to have elections. So somebody come up and chair this meeting, this part of the... Okay, Linda. Or you don't have to come up. You can stay there if you want.
First of all, I'd like to thank the other members of the committee, Keith and Kathy. I thought we worked together very well, and canvassed the membership in our minds to see who might fill these roles. So the slate that we are announcing is for president, vice president, and one board position. Is that right? Okay. So our nominee for president is Steve Fort. Our nominee for vice president is Keith Johnson, and our nominee for the board position is Katrina McCurdy.
Yeah,
and treasurer, okay. Well, we asked John the power behind the throne. Of course, we asked John, and he was happy to continue in that role. So he's nominated as well. Yes, Roger. Should the election proceed, we will then have phase two to replace. Yes. I would be taking the other board position, in this shifting roles. So I guess we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. So, is there an, Steve Fort. Let me go again. Steve Fort, Keith Johnson for vice president, John Ross to continue as treasurer, and Linda Porrell to fill the board seat. Katrina McCurdy staying on in her board seat, Linda Porrell to fill the board seat that would be vacated by Keith.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, all right. So that's the slate, but let me go through it one by one. President Steve Fort, any other nominations for president? Are there any other nominations? Seconded. All right. All those in favor? Okay. Let's go through it again. Vice President Keith Johnson. Yes, Steve. We're so excited. You know, he stepped down as president of Bayview, and we thought his talent should not be wasted. So, Keith Johnson, vice president, longtime loyal member of the RLC. Are there any other nominations? Hearing none? It'd be accepted by acclamation. All right. Keith, yay. All those in favor? Sorry. A little sloppy here. I'll get the hang of this. Treasurer, John Ross, who's done a fabulous job, and why should he not continue? Are there any other nominations? Hearing none, be closed. Voted by acclamation. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Yay. Our money man. Okay. Do I get to do this? I guess I do. Katrina. Katrina is nominated to continue on the board. Devoted member of BRLC. Are there any other nominations? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Now, to fill a vacated board seat, Katrina, yay. And absolutely. You know, it's going to be such a pleasure to be selling that fudge in a little while today. Would you?
Nominate people.
Thank you. And we'll be back in the fall with some more names. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, you, before I hand it back?
Do I understand correctly that this position, you're elected to this position for just until the fall because your position would be up in the fall?
I guess that's right, yes. Yeah, I'm good at, like, doing interim positions and then sort of sneaking in. That's my specialty. So.
I thank you for electing me vice president. An old friend of mine, I think most people know, Frances Menino, died the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And the last time I talked to her when she was still alive, which was a week ago this last Tuesday, I was telling her that I was nominated for vice president of BRLC. And she said, geez, that's the organization still going? Because she was in on the beginning of the organization when BRL started. And so, but she since passed, and I wish she was here to be here because I'm vice president now. She used to live in Glendale, but she passed. She also started the Deaf Blind program there.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when I first met her, I met her when I was 14 years old, and her name then was Frances Thiessen. And, yes, you did. In fact, I should share this, that there were the three people in this organization that were born in the Central Valley. Francis, me, and Bernice Kandarian. Bernice and I were born in Fresno, and Francis was born in Reedley. Reedley. No, Reedley. Okay, that's it.
Okay, hold on. We have one comment from Katrina, and then I got one other thing, very short thing.
Hi, thank you for electing me to the board. I'm very happy to have made the pledge and so forth. I'm grateful there's something I can do, and I know it's a lot easier to sell than those tickets. and so I thought, well, you know, something you bring here, and then you get it sold, and it's done. And I think I'm very thankful to be able to do that. Also, I have a friend for many years named Pam Loveland. I think Josie and we all, and some of you may, and maybe even Elmer knows, remembers her too. Anyway, Pam Loveland, I thought she ought to be a member. She's a wonderful Braille reader. She's loved Braille all her life. And so anyway, I wanted her to come to this meeting, but she comes usually with her friend Linda Amate, she was in an all terrible auto accident and is now in the hospital, going to rehabilitation and all kinds of stuff for all her injuries. And the poor thing, I have a phone number. Anybody wants to contact her, I have a phone number I can give you. But anyway, she would be here if she could, and we look forward to seeing her and Pam at the fall convention. Also, I wanted Pam to be a member, and I had urged her to come to this meeting. But I said I would pay her dues. So I sent in dues, and I gave her address and everything to John Ross. So she's on the mailing list, and we hope to see her here.
Thank you. Okay. With one more thing, I want to tell you that John said that up to date, the Braille Challenge is $354.
Mm-hmm. Hey. Good. Hey, all right, guys.
So keep that money going. You can also send in more if you want. I'd like to also say that I enjoyed being your president for these two terms, and I'm going to be there to help Steve kind of get adjusted. Because just to give him a hand. But anything you want, just ask Steve, and he'll do what he can, because he did a very good job at the Bayview chapter. I can attest to that, and he's going to be a great BRLC president. But I want to tell you that I enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Yes.
I just wanted to say that. When Steve now has been elected, I live fairly close, and Steve, I have a copy of the Braille, copy of the constitution of this group for you, because I think that when you're a president of anything, you need to have your constitution in one hand and your patience in the other. And I really want to say to Marlene, you've done a great job, and she's talking about moving back to California pretty soon. And I told her I hope she hurries up because I know another place where she'd be a great president. In fact, I think of one or two. So the sooner you get back here, the better, okay? And
okay.
Thank you for what you've done for us.
That's okay. Okay. Okay, is there anything else before we adjourn?
I bought the Tico bags. They were sold to us for $2.50 each. And so 100 of them cost $250, and there were $10 for sending them. So I have to ask the treasurer to reimburse me for $260. Do I? You want to vote on that? Is that how we do it?
Yes. Reimburse? Bags.
We reimburse Lynn $260 for the Chico bags.
Seconded.
Okay, Rob, Kathy made a motion to reimburse. We reimburse Winifred for the Chico bags. Is that what they call? Okay. $260, and Rob seconded it. So, any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Carried. Okay. Any final comments before we have our speaker? Yes.
Yes, this is incoming President Steve Ford, and I'm really going to have some big shoes to fill. Marlene O'Neill, I think, presided excellently, did an excellent job as president, and this is the first opportunity I've had to be president of a state affiliate, so I'm going to need all of your help, and I want to thank you in advance for all your support. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. I don't know about big shoes, but I know. I got it. I know. Mike has something to say. Mike Keasley.
This is a change of topic, but there is a message being distributed on the ACBL and CCBL that the Bureau Authority of North America is looking for participants in a survey for NUBS. The Nemeth Uniform Braille Code. If you were interested in participating in the survey, it starts with reading a sampler, a NUBS sampler, and you email brailleauthority@gmail.com. Thank you.
And for all you who don't know, what NUBS stands for, National Nemeth Uniform Braille System. Okay, we have acronyms for everything. So, will someone please entertain a motion that we adjourn? Okay. Well, the business part of the meeting, yes. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we're going to have, we have our speaker, and I would like Roger, since he, oh, there's one other thing. It has to do with the speaker. Would someone work with Steve in the fall from San Diego area to get a speaker for the business, for the speakers meeting?
I will.
Lee Morton will?
Yeah.
Okay. That'll be great. So I don't want him leaving hanging in a lurch. Okay, Roger, would you please introduce our speaker since you so wonderfully got him for us?
I would be delighted to introduce our speaker. You are here, Noel, right? No?
Yeah, he's sitting right here.
Good. I'm kind of blind, you know.
Hold on, I'll give you the mic, too. You might need it.
I've known this guy for a long time. When I first knew him, he worked at Telesensory, and that was before I worked at Telesensory. So, you know, that's been a while. Noel Runyon is a blind engineer, and the fascinating stuff about him that I think is interesting. He grew up in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Apparently, they were really interested in explosives there. He managed to blow himself up and become blind that way when he was a teenager. And he worked at IBM. He worked at Telesensory. And then he started his own business, Personal Data Systems, and does work for, assembles packages for blind folks and things, and has become quite active in voting, issues regarding security as well as accessibility and voting, He also does magic, and that actually fits into the security and voting things because he's good at figuring out ways that people can hack into things and, you know, do things that you're not supposed to do. He also, more to the point of this of today's talk, Noel has become a member of a research team that National Braille Press has set up to do research on the next generation of Braille embossers and Braille displays and that sort of stuff. Braille displays need to be less expensive than they are and more reliable and stuff. So I thought you guys would be interested in hearing about this research that's going on under the sponsorship of the National Braille Press. So without further ado, here's Noel O'Runyon.
Here's a mic.
Thank you. Well, thank you, guys. I'm really, really flattered to be here. Roger may have led you up into thinking I was going to do a magic show here, but that's, although I'm glad to do magic one-on-one close-up with people, including blind folks. I don't have much that's really stage-worthy magic that you can do in front of a large crowd of blind people, so we'll avoid that for now. I think Roger summed it all up. So what I basically need now is just to answer a couple of questions and we'll be done. But I can't resist filling in with some details before that. So we honestly will try to leave plenty of room for discussions because I think that's where we'll get more interesting stuff in this is to talk about it. The general topic of what we'd like to talk about is the new technologies and future for refreshable Braille displays. And where I start on this, as Roger said, quite a while back. When I lost my eyesight, I was about 16 years old and ended up having to develop a lot of the tools for myself, found that I was developing more and more Braille access tools that other people could use. And so I kept doing those as side projects. When I went to work for IBM, it was not to work on Braille stuff, but I got borrowed on a project called the Alphanumeric Display for the Blind project. And they were so head up that they had to put display in quotes because they thought that was a sighted thing. So we had to actually educate them a lot. But that was in 1973. The first thing I did when I got to IBM that was in the Braille area was to start working on what they assumed would be a Braille CRT or a way for us to access Braille through the computer, Braille or other kinds of access. Now, at that time, we didn't have any audio systems like are so prevalent today. In fact, it was a totally different world where we thought that most everybody was claiming Braille was the only way for blind people to access any kind of electronic stuff. Audio was that slow, crummy stuff that you'd hear a word and it'd be 3 or 4 seconds of hitting rewind and stuff like that before you'd hear something again. So, but that got us into a project where we were developing a Braille display, we thought, but looking at other things because initially they said, well, geez, 6,000 solenoids to press up all these pins, that'd be really expensive. So I'm spitting into the mic, I hear. Sorry, I'll turn it sideways here. So we decided, or they started asking the question. This was the group of the task force at IBM that I was on. Said, well, why not just 6 solenoids and we'll multiplex it across the whole page? And I said, lots of people have tried that. It doesn't work. And luckily, they insisted on asking, why doesn't it work? And I said, well, I'm not exactly sure because lots of people have tried it when they started trying to develop a Braille display, but it never seemed to work. And so luckily, they really pushed, and we did some work that I'll talk about a little bit more if we get time. But basically, we took two approaches. One was to see if there was some way of making a Braille display without 6,000 solenoids or coils all over it, and
maybe using audio access technology as well. And so we learned a lot from that project, and that really got me going into trying to develop Braille displays, which I've done over the decades since then, working with the VersaBraille originally, and then later working to develop different kinds of Braille display technologies over the years. The those of you who are at the California conference in the end of October may have seen I brought a classic VersaBraille to show there, as well as other things. And Roger knows me as a collector of junk, an access junkie. And so, I've been collecting different technology just because I had a big garage and a very, very patient wife. But we are actually, as part of our National Braille Press project, trying to find some of the other antique Braille displays, such as the old solenoid types that Medtech made. If you know anybody who's got an old one that, you know, doesn't have to work at all, and they want to donate it to our project, we'd be glad for that. Back to the our National Braille Press project. Most of you are familiar with National Braille Press out of Boston, one of the major national presses of the country, and various people like Diane Croft that you know there over the years that have helped to make so many technical materials available. For about 10 years ago, they actually put on a roundtable conference where they invited a lot of us who had been working in the field to come help them take a look at their future. Guys like Barry Scheuer and Paul Parvano really helped to push that meeting. And we all sat around and talked about the future of Braille and all agreed that electronic Braille could be made someday with full-page Braille displays and more affordable Braille displays. And that National Braille Press was in a good position to take over the project and go with it. And then the director got up at the end of that conference and said, these are all very nice thoughts, but, you know, we have to move very slowly on all of this. And nothing happened for a decade. About 2 years ago, the directorship of National Braille Press changed, and they got in Brian McDonald, who had been running the Boston Aquarium, and he's biologist background and all, and business. And he, you know, it seemed like kind of an odd thing, right? He said, you laugh because, you know, somebody running the aquarium switches to running Braille. Well, he had personal interests in blindness as well. But he had only been there about 2 days before he said, why are we only doing heavy presses of paper Braille? Why aren't we looking towards the future, towards refreshable Braille, and doing something to make that much more affordable? Why aren't we doing something to help make a full Braille page available? I'm still puffing the mic. I'm sorry. So is there an adjustment on the height on this? I'm sorry. No, there isn't. Okay. Sorry. So Brian McDonald at National Braille Press, after he got his feet on the ground there 2 years ago, set up the Center for Braille Innovation. He said, we need to find new ways of embossing. We need to find new ways of doing refreshable Braille. We want to improve Braille literacy by making Braille more affordable and more available, and to make, in the long run, a full-page Braille display, kind of the Braille e-book kind of technology. And so a year ago, as part of this Center for Braille Innovation, or CBI, they pulled together a group of people, several of whom you may know. Anybody here remember the name Dean Blasey? Yeah. No? Well, for those of you who didn't, Dean Blasey is pretty well known as who? The father of the Braille note taker, I think. And Braille and Speak, Braille Light, and all. And it turned out that until 2 years ago, Dean Blasey had been blocked for 8 years under a non-compete for the Freedom Scientific had him on. He wasn't allowed to do anything competitive in the field. But 2 years ago, he came off of that agreement, expired, and he started looking around saying, boy, this field needs something new, because for over a decade, nothing really has happened in the Braille note-taker market. the prices haven't come down by any factors of two or anything. You get, you know, latest version of Bluetooth or something like that was all. So he was really itching to do something. So we ended up getting him on this team. Paul Parvato, who's the MIT's office of the the government affairs office there. He's blind, and he's also the president of NBP on the board. Diane Croft, I mentioned earlier, who's been so involved in developing textbooks for modems, for Apples early on and stuff like that. And she's really into early childhood education. And she feels strongly that if people don't get into Braille by fourth grade, it's going to be very hard for them to ever become very literate in Braille. And so she wants to see us push for being able to get Braille into the hands of people better before fourth grade. And there's Keith Shaw, who was actually involved with Lazy Engineering for a long time, helping develop Braille display technologies. And several people you probably don't know, Jeff Chang, who's been the Chinese liaison for us, myself that most people don't know about in this field. We formed a team. We sat down about a year ago to start this team up. And what we did was really look at the whole field of primarily Braille. We said we'll also look at Braille embossing, but let's look at refreshable Braille. And what can we do to really improve the availability of Braille out there? And, yeah, you can do some things in terms of improving Braille embossers and doing solid Braille Braille printing, some of those things that are new technologies that we have that are starting to look good. But what can we do to really dynamically change the field? And we said we identified two major areas. One is there needs to be a better model for delivering a lower-cost Braille note taker that's a really inexpensive basic device to get into the hands of children early on in their early childhood education. You know, something that instead of $5,000 to $6,000 or something like that is, you know, $400 or, you know, an order of magnitude change. A factor of 10 had to be really made in the price of a note taker to really get to where families could afford it and, you know, elementary schools and all could justify buying them as well. But you could get individuals actually purchasing them, individual families and all. So we also were looking at full page, you know, for the dream of a full e-book in Braille. Now, most of us love paper Braille and have never found anything that reads as nice as paper Braille. But just as is in the case of visual displays, people are finding that once the visual displays for e-books got nice enough and allowed you to take notes and do other things like that, a lot of people started preferring to read that way. And we feel that electronic books will eventually reach that stage where the Braille feels really nice. You can flip through it. You can sit back under a tree and read with it. You don't have to be plugged into your house and stuff. And where you can take notes and do other things. So we started dreaming about what the Braille really needed. Now, as we identified these needs, we said, what's out there to meet these? And I, for decades, have been building a list of all the prior art attempts at making Braille displays. And I'm very proud. I'm buffing my fingers here, thanking myself for being such an expert at how not to make a Braille display. Because we have over 200 different projects to develop Braille displays. And how many of those are successful? You know, very few. So we have found that there are an awful lot of attempts out there, over 140 patents out there on Braille displays, lots of published work as well as unpublished work that people have repeatedly invented again and again, the same, as I call it, square wheel of a Braille display, and run out and patented it and everything. And so we decided that there was a real need that the research field really needed. There needs to be a good list out there commonly available of all the prior art by prior art, we mean all the different ways people have tried to make Braille displays and tactile displays, which includes things like the Opticon. So we've gotten busy doing more work, and I'm about finished with our first pass that we're going to put up on the National Braille Press website soon of a prior art listing that has these several hundred different ways that people have tried to make Braille displays. And going clear back to things that tickled your fingers electrically and had spinning wheels in them, and before you could buy a TV camera, they had something called the Kepco disc. And you got an electrical image of a page, sort of a kludged up thing you might later call an Opticon. But things go, we go clear up through things that heat your fingertip to make a tactile image. Some people using lasers to zap Braille thermally on your finger. All sorts of interesting different kind of approaches, mechanical approaches. And many of them the same thing over and over. Moving belts. There's at least a dozen moving belt schemes that people have come up with where the Braille slides by like the Argonne Brailler under your finger. So those will be things that you can look at that list there. And we plan to build that list. We have just getting the ideas listed right now and the patents where they are available in text form. Those are things that will give you an idea of what's been done out there. And when somebody comes up with a great new idea for a Braille display, they can look at that list and say, oh, somebody did that a decade ago. I wonder why it's not out. You know, there must be a reason. What we also identified was that we needed to work with researchers in the field. And we went out and contacted everybody we could that's currently working on Braille display projects or has been recently working on them. And we did find several of them that were very excited about working with us, about what they had. Some thought they had good technologies, and some do. I have technologies that look pretty exciting, and I'm going to talk more about those towards the end here. We'll see what room we have left on time. But there are a number of different approaches being worked on. One of the people we ran into was Joshi Bar-Cohen, who is at JPL. He's a researcher in the field, and he's the father of electroactive polymers. These are plastics that actually make Braille, or could. They make things move by applying a voltage on a piece of plastic in the right way that makes it wiggle or move. And he was at a blind conference about 11 years ago. He wasn't at the conference. He was in a hotel back in Washington and ran into these blind people who are using Braille lights and Braille notes and things like that. And he said, there must be a better way than what they've got. I wonder if we could use electroactive polymers. Electroactive polymers was an emerging field at the time, just starting to be used to make artificial muscles and robotic stuff. And it was an exciting new field just starting up. And he wrote up a proposal for making a Braille display with electroactive polymers, which I'll come back to more. But he got very interested in this, and he started, as he was writing different books over the years on electroactive polymers, he started collecting names of different people in the field. And so he put me in touch with about 10 of those people right off the bat when I got in touch with him. He also encouraged us to write articles and put them in their worldwide newsletter that goes out to researchers all over the world. So Yossi and I both wrote articles with Dean Blasey for their worldwide newsletter. And basically what I'd found was that the researchers in the field didn't know what Braille dot height was, Braille dot diameters, how hard you need to hold the Braille up, and especially for a refreshable Braille. I mean, they could go to BANA or National Library Service or other places and get specs for paper Braille, but most of them didn't even get that far. They just started saying, well, we need to raise some bumps on a page. And so we decided that we needed to get some specs written up. And so in my paper, I developed specs with Dean Blasey. And we had Judy Dixon at BANA and National Library Service check it out and okay it to actually develop a spec, because nowhere in the world was there a spec for paperless or refreshable braille displays. So that's a, that's something that's in those papers, and we're going to be putting that up on the NBP website. We're planning to build up the NBP website as a major resource for information about braille displays and the technology. We'll put our prior art listing up there. And I'm, when I say we are going to, we're redesigning the website and plan to do this in the next few weeks, where we'll have a prior art listing, we'll have the specifications and, or requirements for Braille up there to let researchers know, you know, okay, you think about making a Braille display, this is how much force you have to hold a dot up. This is how high it has to be. Here's the spacing, things like that. And to help give them a lot of those lessons on how not to make a Braille display or how to avoid inventing more square wheels of Braille displays. So Yossi Bar-Cohen at JPL got us introduced to the field of a lot of the researchers in electroactive polymers and around the world, and invited us, in addition to putting articles in their worldwide newsletter, to also give a talk at the conference, which was held this last March. And Dean and I both did that, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that conference because it was very exciting. But through the summer, we developed up these different approaches to trying to help researchers in the field, to give them information. Then in November, or the actually it was the 1st of November, right after our CCB convention, the next day, my wife and I jumped on a plane to go as part of the NBP team that was invited to the World Information Access Forum in China, in Beijing. We were invited over there to help not only speak at that conference, but to also work with the China Braille Press, which is the sister organization to the National Braille Press in Boston, because we wanted to expand the scope of our project to be a worldwide or global project for developing new Braille display technologies. And they jumped on it. The Chinese government was really behind it as a harmonious sort of thing that was, you know, a better image to put forth for the Chinese people and to do good things for the whole world and some true humanitarian spirit in that. So they have actually put down serious money, invested in this project with money as well as people resources. We got to tour their facilities there, and they have a press with big old heavy presses like Boston's National Braille Press. But they're also doing things like they've written their own screen review program, written a Chinese translation program, and they're getting very sophisticated quickly. I have with me, in fact, and can show anybody who wants, something like the Victor Stream that's really small and fits in your hand, has text-to-speech and MP3, FM radio, all of that for $80. U.S. 80. In fact, I think it sells in China for about 70. It has both English and Chinese in it, and they developed that there. So they are getting sophisticated there. Now they were just very generous people, and the people we are working with, you know, aren't into the politics. Instead, they're into what we can do to really work together worldwide to develop this. So that project has continued. In addition to trying to develop these Braille display research facilities, you know, or to help, I shouldn't say we're developing the facilities, we're trying to help researchers to focus their efforts around the world on Braille displays and to help them go in the right direction so they aren't making old mechanical Braille displays that take 100 watts and can't run on batteries or generate terrific amounts of noise, which, you know, was a recent one done about 2 years ago. Somebody made this wonderful Braille display that rattled away louder than Braille embosser and took a minute and a half to set up a page. But sadly, like so many other researchers, they dove into making that up and actually getting into trying to make some up, not just a prototype, before they found out that they'd gone the wrong direction. So that's the kind of thing we're trying to help prevent, is wasted resources. Our own government is wasting and is still wasting a lot of resources on some kludgy old mechanical Braille display technologies as we speak. They've got researchers out there building some that are just real dogs, you know, that your taxpayer money is being spent on. So we're trying to help people to realize the weaknesses of some of those approaches and to focus on good approaches. So we've picked two directions. After spending months exploring the technology that's out there and talking to researchers, we came to the conclusion that nobody has, or this was a year ago, nobody has Braille technology ready to make a really affordable Braille display today, either in a small 20-cell display for a note taker or a full-page Braille display. And when I say full page, we are focusing on doing at least four lines in a module that can be put together with several modules to make a full page if you want. There are definitely some applications that don't need a whole page but need several lines. So we have split our focus into two main areas. In Braille displays, it's to develop a compact, small, 20-cell-ish, about 20 cells, Braille display that could get us towards that $400, $500 Braille note taker device. And we think that that's possible. Now, when I say possible, you have to keep in mind that when an engineer says possible, they may be thinking 20, 30 years, something like that. And I don't want to get anybody's hopes up that that's going to be there next year, because we've all, Dean Blasey included, have seen so many promises that have been broken about brand new Braille display technologies. And that comes from researchers who are trying to get enough excitement about their idea to get funding to take it a little further. And that has to be done more responsibly. But we found that, yeah, there are umpteen technologies that people can get a reporter excited about, but there are very few that can get cynical old men like me and Dean Blasey excited. But there are a few. So we are working towards trying to come up with some compact devices using one-line displays, using the least expensive that are out there right now technologies, but also aiming towards much more affordable Braille, including a full-page Braille display. Now, this splits into two big projects at NBP. One is the portable note taker. What we're working on is one is a note taker. As Dean had said, not much has happened, and it's because there really needs to be a new model. The new model for delivering Braille displays, because when we looked at it, a Braille display of 20 cells costs the manufacturer $700 today, okay? Typically, you'll take a product cost like that, what it costs you to get the basic unit, and multiply it by three to get what you should sell a finished product for, to do all the rest of the packaging support and stuff like that. So that says that with current technologies, you could be making Braille note-taker devices that were half the price of current Braille note-taker devices, if people were really motivated to. And so Dean Blasey is really spearheading a project to make a note taker. And we are working on designing a note taker that'll be kind of a kick in the rear to any vendors who are going to sit still and try to continue charging the prices they have been. We think that that's what's necessary to help drive down prices using current technologies. We're doing it with open source software. We're doing it with open source hardware. There are boards designed for Linux that you can get the design for free. And you just have to share what you do with it. Same thing with the software. So we're designing a note taker that we hope to get out at half the current price or less for a comparable competitive note taker that has all those good things, the Bluetooth and, you know, Wi-Fi connection and 20-cell Braille display. Most of that will be. Yeah. Dean, I really have to praise Dean Blasey, really feels that we should have openness on everything. In fact, none of us are working with non-disclosure agreements with National Braille Press. We're all volunteering our ideas and time. Dean, you know, has got plenty of fishing and stuff like that he'd rather do on his boat. But he's volunteering his time, and we're volunteering our ideas. And we figure that's the best way to get Braille to move on, is not people hiding their ideas to themselves. So that's the note-taker project. And I don't want anybody to back off on buying a note taker today because we don't have it. If you need a note taker, and you know, go ahead and get one of the current ones. But we expect that over the next couple of years we're going to have this. We aren't going to have a prototype to show people for a year anyway. And we can't say yet when we're going to be selling something or who's going to actually sell it or anything. So don't, I'm not making a promise there of, you know, wait and buy. But the vendors should be aware that there's going to be more pressure to really start cost reducing their products. And an example of the kind of thinking we're trying to change is, without mentioning which one, a certain president of Telesensory Systems, when I was working for them, told me one time when I was talking about trying to cost reduce the VersaBraille from the Classic to come up with a new design called the VersaBraille 2, he said he'd rather sell half as many devices at twice the price. And I just couldn't handle that. You know, why not twice as many devices at half? That is the kind of thinking that some people have had. So we're trying to change that. The other is a project that's gotten a tagline for it that the press really loves, and the dozen or so articles in Popular Science and all that Yoshi Bar Cohen and my article spun off have picked up on, is the term the quest for the Holy Braille. And please, nobody get religiously offended by that. It actually honors the great quest. But what we are searching for is an affordable Braille display technology that can really bring down the cost of it. And this is what's exciting. Okay. I'm going to jump as fast as I can into discussions. But first, I'll tell you about our conference last month, March, in San Diego, a week or so before the CSUN. There was the Worldwide Electroactive Polymers Conference. And Yoshi Bar Cohen set up a special session in this for just tactile display technologies, primarily Braille. And he ended up with, Dean and I were supposed to originally get two papers in that, 45 minutes each. They got so much reception, so much interest, that we whittled down to a single half-hour talk by the time we were ready. But in terms of all the other people they had to fit in. So it had tremendous turnout for this, and this brought in researchers from all around the world that were interested in making Braille displays. So we got to meet lots of the researchers, whether they're working on electroactive polymers or not. And the people that are working on pneumatic Braille displays or other things. Dean and I gave our paper there, and then we actually had a demo session where I had, you know, old VersaBrailles and other kinds of Braille displays. Is that the clue? Yeah. Thank you. We had various different Braille cells from old Braille displays. I had a whole board I'm building up of all different Braille cell modules. That's why we're looking for old Braille units. They don't have to work. We just want the modules. To be able to show people how these displays have developed over the years and what the requirements are. And we were giving away free samples of some of the old Braille displays for researchers to use to make mock-ups or prototypes with. The exciting thing was meeting these other people, giving our talks, and then finding out what other people were working on. And there are a number of projects. In fact, Yossi Bar Cohen's newest book has a whole chapter on Braille, refreshable Braille. I helped review, and he has 9 different Braille display technologies using electroactive polymers in there. That have been worked on over the last couple of years. And where Dean and I come out on this and our conclusions, I should say what our paper was. Our paper was sort of giving this 101 ways not to make a Braille display and talking about our resources as I've done here. But we gave examples of things that led researchers astray, not adding up the power dissipation, finding out you can't plug this in the wall without blowing out a circuit breaker, or having to have a refrigerator to keep the thing cool or something while you're running it. But we talked about a lot of those things, and I'll be glad to talk more in discussions and stuff about some of those different issues for the more techie people that want to. But in addition to that, we had a demo session in which we showed people stuff. And finally, there are these other papers presented. There's some real excitement happening. Dean and I, in our conclusions, talked about some of these other papers and our own research and the fact that we think that within the next couple of years, next 2 or 3 years, we're going to start to see some of the electroactive polymer displays. I'll talk more about that if you want. But this is these special kinds of plastics may start to replace the piezo-ceramic Braille displays that all of you have seen. The standard Braille display today has a mover in in it that uses a little thin reed of ceramic material that they apply voltages on, and it flexes like a diving board, pushes a pin up and down. Those are fragile. They're expensive. There's lots of labor in it. But those will start to be replaced, we think competitively, by electroactive plastic materials that can, plastic, special plastic that can change when you put a voltage on it. That's, and that initially in the next 2 years or so will probably just be competitive, and we'll see some of the things that will start to include those in them. Those don't bring it down a factor of 10. But what will start to bring it down a factor 10 is the sheet-type displays, or much bigger displays. These are displays. Everybody's heard about these, how they're starting to print some of these big visual displays, electronic printing, they call it, or printing of circuitry on a big sheet of plastic. That's how they make these organic light-emitting diode displays and stuff that are, you know, your typical computer monitor. They actually print them on plastic sheets. They can print conductors and semiconductors and, you know, the transistors and stuff like that. We think the same kind of technologies can start to bring the price way down comparably for Braille displays. Now, to get close to wrapping up here, I mentioned before I was going to tell you what electroactive polymer was. Dean and I have sort of concluded, as well as others in our CBI team, that the real future that will probably bring down the costs of Braille displays in 3 to 5 years is electroactive polymers. They're not all these other mechanical things like moving plastic belts or things like that, but the electroactive polymers. Okay, what's an electroactive polymer? You can throw this around as a buzzword, you know, to say you've been here and you listen to my talk and you pick something up. EAP, another acronym, I'm sorry, but electroactive polymer. All that really means is plastics, yeah. Braille is going to be one word. Listen to me carefully, Roger. Plastics will be electroactive polymers. All a polymer is plastic, really. Electroactive means electricity makes it active. So imagine, if you will, a rubbery sheet of silicone rubber. You know, just something like, you know, a stretchy rubber band, sort of a sheet of that. If you put electrodes on either side of that that are flexible, conductive electrodes, and put a voltage on it, it squishes together. Or anywhere you've got a voltage across it, it squishes it together. So imagine a sheet laying on the table of this thin plastic and pins held in a plate over that and resting on it. Wherever the plastic is pulled together because of the voltage, the pin will drop. So it's a very simple kind of approach. And making it work is what's not so simple. But the concept is simple, and that's what we're talking about in most of the electroactive polymers that could bring the price down. There are other ways of making electroactive polymers where you roll the sheet of stuff into a little roll, and so when it squishes together, the length of the roll changes and lifts the pin up. There are a lot of different approaches. As I say, Yossi Barcon's new book has 9 of them in one Braille chapter. So at this conference, there was one from Italy. Federico Carpi had one that's hydraulically coupled, where he has an oil that couples from one of these electroactive membranes up to push a Braille pin up. Yeah. No. I'll summarize the others real quickly and then stop. There was another major one, which we think is exciting, is out of UCLA, Kaibing Pei, PEI, that has one that is a thin plastic sheet that you actually locally heat it by running current through a little spot for a Braille cell, and then apply a voltage to it, and that will pop the dot up. And let it cool back down in a second, and it's solid, kind of like the feel. I mean, it's as solid as styrofoam. So put pins on top of that, and it'll be sitting there tomorrow or next year when you come back, the same Braille information. So it has a memory on it, that plastic sheet. There was also somebody at the conference that had a Braille embossing approach where they had sheets of shape memory plastic, a plastic that would keep its memory, that you could actually erase it by ironing it down and then thermally heat it in areas and put braille dots in it again. So these are some of the exciting new technologies we'll be glad to talk to you all more about, and I'm glad to talk afterwards and questions with people. What we really think is we're probably talking 3 to 5 years before we'll see the first real good working full-page braille displays start to be able to impact our market. Nearer term, in the next 2 years, we'll start impacting by kind of forcing vendors and others to start to bring their prices down to using current technologies. But longer term, we'll have a lot of different exciting plastic braille technologies. Thank automatic pacing. You should be able to. That should be a software technology. The reason why probably you're asking is there have been proposals that would take Braille and maybe take a minute or so to set up a page of Braille. And some people, naive people in the field will say, well, blind people read from the top to the bottom. We'll just start setting the page up. The Rose Reader was an example of this. Anybody back in 1980 saw the Rose Reader. They were saying, well, it doesn't matter that it takes 3 minutes to set up the page because you have to, it'll take you that long to read. Well, if all you're reading is Zane Grey novels from start to finish or something, maybe you read that way a lot. But an awful lot of us today will want a cursor cross out in the middle of the page and do interactive work with it. We want to maybe jump to the bottom of the line and see what it says more or whatever. We're not going to want to sit around and wait for a minute or so for it to set up a page. So exactly. As Roger was saying, the point of a Braille page is to be able to examine anything on the page and not have to wait 2 or 3 minutes to do it. So in our specifications, we have said we'd like any new Braille technologies to respond within a tenth of a second. That's especially if you're doing a line display. And that there are some applications for which you can take a second or so to set up a page, but not minutes. Okay, Mike. Yes, Mike, I agree. What Mike is asking about is why I only think of it as text. We have been looking at, and there's no good reason you can't display a whole high-density text image with some of the technologies that are on the horizon. Yes, you could do a fancy graph, whatever you wanted. Trying to make a display that will do both is a little problematic if people were going to insist on exact Braille dimensions, because good tactile dots need to be closer than regular Braille dots if you want tactile graphics. If you did every single dot on Braille centers, say essentially about 11th of an inch apart, you'd find that your Braille cells, cell-to-cell spacing would be a little different. So either people would have to adapt to the Braille spacing being slightly different from what they're used to if they wanted the same page to do graphics, or you have to have a different display. I want you to feel free to pick my brain on this, because Dean Blazian and the others on the committee, which includes also Peter Condisanti now recently, has joined the committee. We want to be available as resources, for people for mentoring displays, or if you want an idea, like you're talking about pacing Braille, if you want an idea like that to be thought about on systems, sure, pass them to us, and we'll make sure they get passed around to people. So you. I'll repeat it if you want to say it. Okay. Well, it depends on whether you're talking about buying like a separate one-line Braille display or a full note-taker type device. Typical one-line Braille display. Okay, she's asking about, for those who didn't hear it, she's asking about the pricing on Braille displays and whether she could get a Braille display that would go on whatever computer system she wanted. I think there are a couple of different approaches. One approach is a dedicated note-taker kind of device, like a Braille Light or Braille Note type device, like we're doing one for early on product here from National Braille Press. The other is full line and full or partial page Braille displays. And those should be standalone Braille displays, typically, that can be put in another product, attached to another product like a computer or whatever. Currently, the lower end of the pricing range for a one-line Braille display right now is about $2,700. That's the lowest they've gotten so far. That's just for a standalone Braille display. That recently, that was a price. Freedom Scientific, some would say in response to our work, has dropped their price from $4,800 on the one-line display down to around $2,700 or
$2,800.
So, okay, thanks.
Thank you very much for a round of applause.
I want to thank you all. And for those that want to see me later with questions, I'd be glad to. Plus, I also have the mock-ups of the first units so people can get their hands on it. And I want feedback on how people like the feel of the keyboards and because that's part of the design we're doing is trying to get good keyboard design.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.